Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, January 16th, 2011.
Turn in your Bibles to the second chapter of the book of Romans, and we'll begin reading with the 17th verse. In the first chapter, we saw how all mankind in the ancient world and into today's world too became sinful. That is, not just sinful as a nature, but sinful in behavior. And so in the first chapter, we see God's indictment of the immoral man. In chapter 2, the first 16 verses, we see God's indictment of the moral man. Not everyone in the world is as evil as they can become. In fact, some people are very likable and in many respects righteous, but not before God. Beginning with chapter 17, or verse 17 of chapter 2, we read God's indictment of the religious man. And this, as it turns out, to be the indictment of the Jews, because they were the only people in the whole world at that time who had any religion worthy of such a title. So we will read through the first several verses here, and we'll take this in sections. Beginning in verse 17 of the second chapter of Romans, "Behold, thou art called a Jew, and restest in the law, and makest thy boast of God, and knowest his will, and approvest the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and art confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind, a light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which hast the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law." And those were claims happened to be true. For the Jews were a different people from all of the other peoples on the world. And God made them to be different. And he said them, he would call them to be a different people, separated or consecrated to himself. And he made them different, whether they wanted to be or not, and many of them did not want to be, by something called the law. Now the law separated them from all other peoples for one of the most obvious things, by diet. They could not eat certain animals that all of the rest of the world ate. And then their religion was decidedly different than many others, despite the superficial similarities of sacrificing. And there are many different regulations. The manner of dress was regulated. That made them different. If you want to see how different they looked to the Gentiles in the ancient world, go to Brooklyn and see how the Lubavitcher Jews dress. So different from everybody else. That was the way the Jews appeared in the eyes of all of the other peoples of the world at that time. So their claims here were true. They did have God's law, the only revealed religion in the world at that time. the time of the Old Testament up to the time of the gospel. They did, to a degree, know God's will. And it was his will was expressed in the law. And approvest of the things that are more excellent. The Jews by that day did. They were more culturally refined in many ways. And to this very day, the Jews excel in learning and the things that are culturally refined. I was reading the other day in the newspaper a religious analysis of the 112th Congress. And it said, it gave the breakdown of the religious affiliations of the members, not individually, but by percentages. And the Jewish people make up 2% of the population of this country, but they make up over 6% of the members of the House of Representatives. So they do value the things that are more excellent. It is very surprising, amazing, how many of your symphony conductors are Jewish, out of all proportion to the population, and how many of them are so excellent in their musical instruments. So this claim was true, being instructed out of the law, for the law did elevate the thinking of the Jewish people above the thinking of the heathens that were often so very terribly debased. And are confident that thou thyself art a guide of the blind and a light of them that are in darkness. They were commissioned to be a light unto the Gentiles. We read that in the prophets, that they were to be a light unto the nations. An instructor of the foolish. If you've ever read anything in pagan religion, any of their mythologies, you will be amazed at how foolish are the things that people can believe in the name of religion. Of course, that's true in our country too today. An instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, and has a form of the knowledge of the truth in the law. They did have the form of the knowledge of truth in the law. The 119th Psalm lauds the law on this very point. But now, what about their claims? Their claims were true, but what about their achieving those claims? The apostles' point here, as we'll see as we'll proceed, Jewishness is not righteousness. Now, this is one of things, a number that probably most Jews today would dispute with Paul. And it is one of the offenses of the gospel unto the Jewish people. That Jewishness is not righteousness. And he goes on to show this. I was impressed about this a number of years ago when I was calling on hospital and clinic pharmacies. I was surprised at the percentage of pharmacists in the independent drugstores, which are now vanished, were Jewish. And I called on one pharmacy that was run by a couple of older men, not elderly, but kind of middle-aged. And they were Jewish. And I might say, before I get into that, that they're the only Jewish people of this kind that I'm going to describe that I have known, that I have met in this great city of Denver. But once when I was in the store, well, first, these two men had about the foulest mouths that I've ever known in anybody. And once when I was in the store working with one of the men, the other man came in. The first man said, "Well, are you sanctified?" He says, "Yeah, I'm sanctified." And I turned to him and said, "You're sanctified?" And he says, "Yeah, I'm sanctified." By the which he meant, he had undergone a ritual that made him ritually pure to participate in the ceremonies of the High Holy Days. I remembered their conversations and their jokes, but now by ritual, he was sanctified. It's only truth to say that sanctified means something different from the Jews than it does from the Christians because of the New Testament. Because in Hebrew, the word kadosh, sanctified, simply means separated. And the Jews were, as a nation, kadosh. God had separated them from the nations of the world. And at places in the Old Testament, sanctified had come to mean to have a moral aspect to it. But in Hebrew today, it simply means separation. So the ritual, ceremonially separated him unto the service of the holy days, which meant it, in this case, they were compartmentalizing their thoughts and their life. One thing in a synagogue, another thing in business. Do you know any Christians like that? Compartmentalize their lives, be there one thing in church, another thing on the job. This is one of the accusations of the apostle against his own people. So they had the law. They made their boast of God. All the way through the Old Testament, they made their boast of God. This is one of David's chief themes in his Psalms. They boasting that they serve the God of heaven and earth. They boast in the God. They knew his will. They approve things that are more excellent. They are instructed out of the law every Sabbath day. And they're confident that they are a guide to the blind and a light to them in darkness and an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, has a form of the truth in the law. Those were their claims. But what about those claims? Paul tells us of their default from righteousness rather than their attaining unto righteousness. They rested in the law. The law was not something you rested in. The law was something you worked in. So, beginning with verse 21, he accuses them against their claims. Thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God? And then he quotes from the prophet Isaiah to nail his point down. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. And that is written in the 52nd chapter of Isaiah and the 5th verse. So he here accuses them of violating all of their claims. They are not the only ones who teach one thing and do another. We've seen that aplenty in recent years and read about it in the newspaper. And they made their boast in the law, but through breaking the law, they dishonored God. They didn't, for the most part, break the law by gross sins. But the point that Paul is making here is that minor sins are sins. There's no such thing as a white lie. There's just a lie. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written. And then he goes on to show them that Jewishness not only is not righteousness, but that Jewishness was greatly misunderstood by them. For he goes on to show that rather than resting in the law, which was not something to be rested in, they broke the law rather than working in the law and conforming to the law. And he shows them that rites, R-I-T-E-S, are not righteousness. Ceremonies are not salvation. He shows them their lack before God the same as he did of the heathen. For circumcision verily profiteth if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. That is, if they failed to keep the law, circumcision was of no profit. And for circumcision verily profiteth if thou keep the law, he's showing them that the rite of circumcision was not an attainment. It was an obligation. And those who had received the sign of the covenant of circumcision were obligated to keep the law. And, of course, the Jews, like other people, were very aware that, as we would say, we're only human. What can you expect of me? I'm only human. So the rabbis of Paul's day had devised a system, later enshrined in the Talmud, whereby one could be okay. He could keep these various regulations that they could keep, and then they were okay. But Paul says, "For circumcision verily profiteth if thou keep the law. But if thou be a breaker of the law, thy circumcision is made uncircumcision. Therefore, if the uncircumcision, meaning Gentiles, keep the righteousness of the law, shall not his uncircumcision be counted for circumcision?" He's not saying that Gentiles would be saved by keeping the law, though uncircumcised. He's saying that if a Gentile is morally upright and a Jew is not morally upright, the Jew is no better off than the Gentile, because Jewishness is not righteousness, and rites and ceremonies are not salvation. And if the uncircumcision, Gentiles, which is by nature, if it fulfilled the law — he didn't say they did, but he said if they did — shall it not judge thee, who by the letter and circumcision dost transgress the law? In other words, by transgressing the law, in spite of their religiousness, they were no better than Gentiles. If that is as far as it went. But then he goes on to say why Judaism is not righteousness, and why ceremonies are not salvation. For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision, which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart. What he is saying is that a Jew, though he conforms to all the requirements of the law, and it is not a matter of the heart, if he does not have the faith of Abraham, which Abraham had before he was circumcised, he is no better off than a Gentile. That, to a Jew, was a low blow. That is why the Jews hated Paul so. That is why they dogged him from town to town, from city to city, from country to country, and sought to kill him. He had insulted them and their religion. And he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of God, of men, but of God. So Abraham received the sign of the covenant, which was a sign of God's act on behalf of Abraham and on behalf of his descendants. It was nothing for the Jews to claim as righteousness. The only claim they had on righteousness was that same claim that Abraham had of faith and a matter of the heart. Well, that was pretty stiff for the Jews. It is one of the reasons why the gospel didn't make further progress than it did among the Jews of that day. But they stood condemned by the apostle the same as the Gentiles did. So the point Paul is making here, and he belabors in chapter 3, is the immoral Gentile is a sinner before God. The moral Gentile is a sinner before God. The religious Jew is a sinner before God. That's pretty devastating. So, very early, the church fathers picked up on this and said, God's through with the Jews. Paul said so. Paul had to defend the Jews against this charge in his day and say God was not through with the Jews in spite of the fact that they were turning away from the gospel. So then in chapter 3, we'll read for several verses. What advantage then hath the Jew, or what profit is there of circumcision? Much in every way. He's not saying that their religion was unprofitable. He's saying that it was ineffective so far as righteousness before God is concerned. But take now a look at the advantage of Judaism. Jewishness is not righteousness. Ceremonies are not salvation. But what advantage then hath the Jews? Or what profit is there of circumcision? And he is not contradicting himself in saying much in every way. They did have great advantages in that religion. It kept them a people apart, for the most part, from paganism. It elevated their society. The Jewish society was the only society in the ancient world that gave any status to women. And among the Gentiles, only the Romans did. And it did have a law that was fair in adjudicating quarrels and crimes and in judging it, for this was also the civil law of Israel. What advantage then hath the Jew? Or what profit is there of circumcision? Much every way, chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of God. The oral prophecies later written down by the prophets. The sacred history of the redemption. The Psalms of faith. Every word of the Old Testament. It is as precious to us as it was to them. For what if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faithfulness of God without effect? Their unbelief didn't have any effect at all on God's faithfulness. It had an effect on their own life and on their destiny. For what if some did not believe? Shall their unbelief make the faithfulness of God without effect? God forbid, yea, though God be true, let God be true, but every man a liar, as it is written, that thou mightest be justified in thy sayings, and mightest overcome when thou art judgest. Those are the words of David in his penitential 51st Psalm, when he repented of his crime and claimed not the law, but the faithfulness of God. But if our unrighteousness commend the righteousness of God, what shall we say then? Is God unrighteous who taketh vengeance? I speak as a man. This is his first objection the Jews brought up against Paul. If our unrighteousness commend the righteousness of God, God's unrighteous then for taking vengeance upon the wicked. I speak as a man, and Paul did have that objection thrown at him, and we can read about it in detail in his letter to the Galatians. God forbid, for then how shall God judge the world? God has to be righteous in every judgment, or he would not be righteous in any judgment. For if the truth of God hath more abounded through my lie unto his glory, why am I also judged as a sinner? That was what they were saying to Paul. And not rather as we be slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say, and this was the second objection they threw at him. Let us do evil, that good may come, whose judgment is just. If it doesn't make any difference, it doesn't make any difference. But it does make a difference. And then this is his conclusion. What then? Are we better than they? In no wise. For we have before proved, both Jews and Gentiles, that they are all under sin. And this is the conclusion of his indictment of humanity. Immorality is judged. And the moral man does not escape the judgment of God, because he is still a sinner. And the religious man does not escape the judgment of God, for he is yet a sinner in his religion. And then he ends his indictment here with a litany of rapid-fire scriptures. If you're taking notes, I'll read them out to you. In verses 10 to 12, he quotes from the 14th Psalm, verses 1 to 3. In verse 13, he quotes from the 5th Psalm, verse 9. In verse 13, he also quotes from the 140th Psalm, verse 3. In verse 14, he quotes from the 10th Psalm, verse 7. In verses 15 to 17, he quotes from Isaiah 59, verses 7 and 8. In verse 18, he quotes from Psalm 36, 1. And in verse 21, he quotes from Psalm 133, 2. Wouldn't you like to know the Bible that well? Be able to quote them offhand like that? Because the writers of the New Testament knew their Bible. What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise, for we have before proved, both Jews and Gentiles, that they are all under sin. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. The way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. He made no exceptions. They are all. Now we know that whatsoever the law saith, it saith to them that are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God. That's kind of a negative note to end on. But how many of you have seen a beautiful Mexican painting in bright colors on a black velvet background? These first 2.5 chapters are the black velvet background against which the brilliant colors of the gospel of love and grace is placed by Paul, beginning with the 20th verse of the 3rd chapter. There is an answer. And it is in the gospel of Jesus Christ.